Now we are joined by the Labour leader, Andrew Little. Andrew, how's it going?
Oh, very good. I'm in Edgecombe at the moment.
You're in Edgecombe?
Been having a look at some of the damage and trying to keep out of the rain. But
right.
So pretty sobering morning, to be honest.
Yeah, I heard you were visiting the families this morning, actually. And it's kind of barely recovered from the destructive floods from last week, and now we're expecting the worst storm since 1968. What's kind of the update, I suppose?
Yeah, I guess people are just bracing themselves. I mean, we were being escorted by a police officer who was suddenly told he had to go to Waipouriki because they were expecting really serious things there, so he had to take off. So I think there's a sense that people are just bracing themselves. They kind of got through the best they can last week, and more to come. So, it's tough. It highlights that issue, though, about changing weather patterns and climate change. We've got to get serious about this stuff.
Yeah, and hundreds of residents are kind of facing displacement at the moment. What are your proposed plans to help Edgecombe and other flood-damaged eastern Bay of Plenty areas?
I mean, it's not going to be fixed quickly. Just looking at some of the houses, a lot of the houses are repairable, but that's still going to take months, and there are some houses that are complete write-offs. And I think the main thing is to make sure that for those people who are going to be out of their houses for some months, even if they can get back into them eventually, is that they have somewhere to go. And I think I just don't know enough, people couldn't tell me about what the availability of alternative housing is like around here. That's going to be the challenge. And because people still got jobs to hold down and families to get together and kids to get to schools. People don't want to up sticks and go somewhere completely different. So that's going to be the challenge, is making sure that there is a place for people to go for a few months while the town gets back on its feet.
Can you talk to us a bit about some of the families that you've met this morning?
Yeah, I went to a couple of the marae that are, one is putting on meals and providing clothing. I mean, they've had amazing donations, just all sorts of things, clothing, bedding, the linen and stuff. So a lot of people in and out of there. A lot of people are staying with friends and family, and that's okay at the moment, although they are saying they're staying in overcrowded housing. But they can get a meal at the marae, and so that's pretty good. I went to another marae that is just doing sort of food packs. Again, supporting people who are in temporary accommodation now. But they, I think people, they're at that stage where they know what's happened. They know they've got their lives to pull together, and they're just kind of getting through day by day at the moment. That was the most commonly used phrase, just getting through day by day. But people are holding up, but it's going to be, that constant need for support until things do get truly sorted out is still going to be needed. And I think just knowing that, other New Zealanders understand what's happening and are supportive of them, I think, we've still got to maintain those sort of messages of solidarity.
Yeah, I guess it's good to hear that the community is kind of banding together to help out. Sort of on a similar note, there's also the plan that Labour has pledged to instate 400 state rentals or affordable houses for Hutt Valley by 2020. And I was just kind of wanting to touch on an aspect of this pledge, which proposes 1 to 3 bedroom homes within the cost range of 200 to 350,000. How can you ensure these prices within Hutt Valley?
The thing is, the purpose of that announcement was really to highlight that there is land already there that's not only available to be built on, actually was built on before. These are places where there used to be houses, and including state houses. So all the drainage and the plumbing and everything is there. And it's for that reason that we can keep the cost down. It adds to that, these will be medium density sort of housing arrangements, so they're not kind of quarter acre sections. And we can negotiate long-term supply agreements with building material suppliers. All those things will help keep the cost down, and so that's why I'm confident we can do that. But I think it really highlights the fact that, in a country where we do have such a massive shortage of housing, and you see these empty sections in these suburban areas, we've got to, it's got to be a priority that's where we've got to start to build houses, and the government's got to lead it because the private developers aren't going to.
But do you think 400 state rentals is actually enough in terms of putting an end to poverty and homelessness in these areas?
It certainly won't put an end to poverty. It'll make a big difference in terms of homelessness. I mean, there's a few other things we need to do. We've got to stop rents being hiked, and that comes back to the overall problem of that shortage of housing, shortage of, own your own housing sort of thing. So we've got to do that. In terms of the bigger poverty question, there's the income side of it as well, and that's a big project to work, is how we start to lift incomes, which you do through a range of things, including pay equity. And we've got to get, jobs, occupations, professions dominated by women that get systemically paid lower than men. I mean, you start to fix that problem, you start to address those income inequalities and poverty questions there. So housing sits at the heart of a lot of inequality problems, because if you don't have an anchor point in your life, you miss out on a heap of other opportunities. Kids miss out on stable education. So that fixes that long term. But I'm not saying that this is a panacea for absolutely every major challenge that we've got to fix.
But what can our current government do to address these issues of, as you mentioned, inequality and inequity? Earlier this week, you were quoted as saying Bill English was bleeding Housing New Zealand dry and failing to show leadership.
Yeah, so that's why. The reason we've made a big priority about housing and also health is that they are two parts of the inequality equation. People know that they have their own roof over their heads, whether they're renting it, whether they are paying for it themselves through a mortgage, whatever. People need their own place, and it's got to be, warm, safe and dry. That is a huge issue, and we know that tens of thousands of people in New Zealand don't have that. They are living in overcrowded housing, living with others on a temporary basis. So you fix housing, you go, that's one step towards fixing inequality. You fix health and make sure that good health care is accessible to everybody who needs a good primary health care, as a start. So that people aren't falling sick and having to turn up to a hospital with their children with respiratory conditions. And that goes a long way. Then there's then there's the other issues about incomes, which we have to address as well. But relying on or treating Housing New Zealand as basically a property manager that makes a profit and pays a dividend to the government, which is what this government has done for the last 9 years, that's not helping anybody. In fact, it's making the situation worse, and that's what we have to turn around.
And lastly, what's kind of your stance on overseas investment into our existing houses?
I mean, the idea, we have a whole bunch of people who live overseas, buy a house here, don't live in it. They just want to have a New Zealand house because they see a property price bubble. We would do what other countries, including Australia, are doing and say, listen, if you're living overseas or you're resident overseas and you want to buy a house in New Zealand, you can build a new house. And the existing housing stock that are here, let those who are living here, have access to those houses, compete on the market for those sorts of houses. So we would put some restrictions on that. We think that helps get at least some of the speculators out of the market.